Good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us all tonight on our Pro Football Weekly pre-draft Facebook Live presentation to our live audience here at the Rib House, the Crystal Lake Rib House in Crystal Lake, Illinois. We appreciate all of you guys being here with us. Thank you. Everyone out in cyberspace, and we don't know who that is, but we're talking to you, and we appreciate you being with us. We know that this audience comes in at the start and builds during the course of the show. We will have several thousand folks with us before we're through. Obviously, not everybody fits here at the Rib House in Crystal Lake. I want to start by thanking, before I even get to introductions or anything else, our host, Dave Ficone, the folks at the Rib House, the Crystal Lake Rib House. Guys, if you're here now, the ribs are outstanding. The beer is ice cold. If you're not here now, but you're visiting with us on Facebook, make sure you get by. Just check it out on the web at Crystal Lake Rib House. Check the menu, check the hours. Great, great place to be. They're really gracious hosts. This is the second time that we've done one of our Facebook Live shows from here at the Crystal Lake Rib House, and it is really great to be back with you all. I am Hub Arkish, the editor and general manager at Pro Football Weekly. I am joined on my right, your left, by senior editor and reporter Eric Edholm, and to my left, your right, this is the one and only Greg Gabriel, our personnel developer, our personnel scout, former 31-year NFL scout, ran the Chicago Bears college scouting department for 10 years, and Greg, of course, now with Pro Football Weekly, also with me at The Score. We do a lot of work at 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. I guess technically I am their senior NFL analyst as well. That just means I'm old, and it's really just a lot of fun to get to visit with you guys, whether it's here in person or via Facebook, on the radio. Of course, we have our Pro Football Weekly and Pro Football Weekly Chicago TV shows as well, and we hope that you're spending as much time as you can at ProFootballWeekly.com. Before we launch into the subject of the evening, you've probably heard about it by now. If you haven't, I don't want you to miss out on it. We are wrapping up the 50th year of Pro Football Weekly, and to celebrate our 50th anniversary, we wanted to come up with a real fun promotion for everybody, including us, because we're having a blast with it. And we decided that since we launched in 1967, which was the year of the AFL and NFL merger, and is pretty much defined as the modern era of the NFL, wouldn't it be fun to pick the greatest team of the modern era of professional football? And what that means is we've gone back over the last 50, almost 51 years now, the anniversary wraps up with this draft, is we're not trying to say these were the 50 best players. We're literally trying to build a team and give each of you, as your own NFL experts, the chance to build your team as well. So please, when you get a chance, go to ProFootballWeekly.com. If you're there now with us on Facebook, wait until we're done. But go over there, check Team for the Ages, click on it, click Enter now. It'll walk you through. It couldn't be much easier. In order to be a candidate for the team, you have to have been a Pro Football Weekly / Pro Football Writers Association All-Pro at least twice in your career. We wanted to make this thing completely objective. We didn't want any subjectivity brought into it. We came up with some clear guidelines. Interesting, right off the bat, particularly since Gabriel here originally is a Buffalo guy, a guy like Jim Kelly, who makes the Hall of Fame, was not a two-time All-Pro. Believe it or not, John Elway was not a two-time All-Pro. They're not eligible for the team. Wait till you see the quarterbacks who are. You won't be so worried about it. Also, when you get there, don't immediately email and say, "Where's Jim Brown?" Again, yeah, he's the greatest player in the history of the game, but this is the modern era. Jim Brown retired in 65. This is players 67 and forward. And if you don't want to do it just for fun, and it's a ton of fun, we've written bios on every one of the 300 nominees. All their stats are there. Just going through it and trying to put together your team. I went in to get done in 15 minutes because of my job, and I ended up there 4 hours later still reading this stuff. But beyond that, you're not doing it just for fun. There are some incredible prizes available. The grand prize, and I got to be careful here because we can't afford to be NFL sponsors. So that game that they play in February where the AFC champion plays the NFC champion that I can't call by its name because I won't give the NFL $250,000 to be a corporate sponsor, we're giving away an all-expenses-paid trip to that game. Tickets, airfare, hotel, the whole nine yards, spending money. There's a bunch of great cash prizes. There are tailgating prizes. There's all kinds of Pro Football Weekly gear. It's just a ton of fun to get involved in. So please, when you get a chance, anytime in the next couple weeks, but do it soon so you don't forget. Go to ProFootballWeekly.com, click on Team for the Ages. I promise you, you will not regret it. And if you do, it only takes a second, so just don't join, and that'll be that. But I'm sure you will. It'll be a lot of fun. So with that, It is draft time. I don't know about you guys. This is my favorite time of the year. Greg, I assume it's your favorite time of the year because what you were employed for 30-some years. So I come to you first, and let's go lighthearted early. You got to have a million great stories of your years in the Giants war room, the Bears war room, some time with the Eagles, other clubs. If you got one story, one draft story that sticks out for you or one of your fonder memories of all the years of scouting and preparing for these drafts?
Well, actually, it gets to a negative thing, and that was, and I forgot the exact year it was, but it was the year that Simeon Rice was drafted and Hardy, and we had the fifth pick in the draft. Mm-hmm. And the first four to went off, and I don't remember the exact order, were Keyshawn Johnson, Simeon Rice, Hardy, and
Jonathan Ogden.
Ogden. So we had the fifth pick, and we were positive going into that draft that we were going to get one of those players because one of those teams would take Lawrence Phillips, the running back, the beleaguered running back from Nebraska. Well, that didn't happen. And those guys went 1, 2, 3, 4, and we didn't have a pick. And I learned a lot that day, more than anything else, that when you go into a draft, you have to expect the worst, be prepared for the worst, and have a plan for the worst. And then if you can accept that plan, you're pretty good going forward.
Eric, you've been doing this almost 20 years now, most of them at Pro Football Weekly. Have you got a favorite NFL war story, draft story that comes to mind off the top of your head?
Well, actually, I did a big story not too long ago, a little over a year ago, about that 96 draft of the Ravens, and everybody expecting to take Lawrence Phillips. So it's always fun to hear teams, evaluators, coaches, their candor after the fact, like Greg said. Hey, you know, we had a plan A, we didn't have a plan B. You hear it so often. The draft, and I would say this one especially, is going to fall into that category, is very unexpected. You know, what you think is going to happen isn't going to happen. Everyone expected Reggie Bush to be the number one pick. 48 hours out, Mario Williams is the guy. And it really set down this kind of domino effect. And I feel like on some level that happens every year. The quarterbacks this year certainly are going to be a factor. So when the Bears are picking at number 8, they may have to expect that unexpected situation, I think.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories, it's again, unfortunately, we're all coming up, or not all, we're coming up with somewhat less than positive stories, but I go back to, I believe it was the 99 draft, and it was the 5 quarterbacks in the first 14 picks draft, and everybody knew what was coming, and I was still doing the Bears games on the radio at the time, was very close to the front office group then. It was Mark Hatley and Bill Reese, and Bill, just a great, great guy. You may remember his son Tommy was a starting quarterback at Notre Dame for, I think, 2.5 seasons, mm-hmm. up until a few years ago. He's now coaching there, but Bill, you know, one of the all-time great front office college scouting guys, and we were talking on the Friday night. In those days, the draft was still Saturday and Sunday. We all knew the Bears were going to take a quarterback. That was the year that, of course, Donovan McNabb went first. Then Akilah Smith came on. They kept rolling off the board. And the Bears had identified their guy, and it was Cade McNown. And this is the night before. And I'm talking to Bill, and I said, listen, I know I'm just a lowly radio announcer, and I don't pretend to have the insight that you guys do. But forgetting the football part of it for a moment, how can you use the 12th overall pick on the draft on a guy who is the least popular guy in his own locker room? And if Bill had said to me, well, that's not what we're hearing, I would have said, okay. But he pretty much acknowledged that that was the case and said, well, we think that he's a little misunderstood, and we like the edge to him, and we can bring him around. And as we now know, 20 years later, that didn't work out so well. And there are many, many stories like that about the picks you missed on. But for every one of those, there's the great stories of the kids you found. And what's interesting to me, guys, about this Chicago Bears football team right now, and we're going to go NFL, all 32 teams, because we're here in Crystal Lake, Illinois. There's probably a couple Packer fans in the room. You can stay. But, you know, we know it's mostly Bears fans. So we're going to be talking, you know, a fair amount about the Chicago Bears. And what intrigues me right now, Greg, about this team is that say what you want about Ryan Pace has done in free agency, and say what you want about his 3 first-round picks, he's done a really nice job of finding good football players in the middle rounds. I mean, you look around, you see a Jordan Howard, you see an Eddie Jackson, you see some of these kids that are playing for them right now, and in many respects, I think you can argue that that's almost as important as hitting on those first-round picks.
Absolutely. That's where your depth comes from, is from that 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th round. And when you hit on that, it's really a bonus. And if you can get a starter out of the 4th round or get a starter out of the 5th round, that makes your team that much better.
Eric, I know that, you know, as we get ready for this draft, this one a little different to me than recent years. We've gotten so used in the last 3, 4, 5 years to the wide receiver group being loaded, the cornerback group being loaded, four, five, six of these kids coming off in the first round. That's not going to happen this year. I'm not saying these are bad groups, but the talent at the top is not quite there. And almost equally unusual, you got a draft where the first round could be loaded with offensive guards. That almost never happens. Not only is maybe the best player in this draft, Quentin Nelson, an offensive guard, but you look at Will Hernandez and Isaiah Wynn and some of these other kids, you could have three or four guards in the first round. You probably won't have more than two tackles, so it's unusual in that regard. It's a loaded running back draft. Pretty good with pass rushers, but they all come with big question marks, except for maybe Bradley Chubb. And so in that regard, it's been a lot more fun, I think, both communicating with fans and doing some of our commentary, whether they're chats or these Facebook Live shows or some of our radio call-in work. But at the end of the day, and again, we've got about a week left to wrap this up until it actually happens, what have you focused in on? Where is the real strength of this draft positionally?
Yeah, even if quarterbacks do go, you know, stacked like that 99 group where you have five who go somewhere in the top half around one, some, you know, stretching into the middle part around one, I don't know that you can definitively say this is a banner quarterback class. This is not 1983 with John Elway and Dan Marino and that whole group. I really don't believe it. I think it's a good class at that position. But the trickle-down effect will be that you're picking somewhere in that 6 to 15 range. I think some good defensive players will be there. Like you said, some good interior offensive linemen. Kid from Notre Dame, Quentin Nelson. You could argue he's the best player in the draft. You could say, you know, pound for pound, regardless of position, whatever you want to say, this could be a multi-Pro Bowl level player on the inside. How high do you take a guard? That's a great debate. Saquon Barkley could be your next best player, but how high do you take a running back? Are they being phased out of the NFL in some regards? So it is kind of an upside-down draft, and if you don't get a pass rusher early, like you said, I don't know that you're going to be able to get one in mid-round two, early round three.
Greg, I know you've been in the war room. You've been part of this whole quarterback thing. You, of course, were running the department when Rex Grossman came along here in Chicago. And you look at, I don't know who just laughed, but you're the one who's wrong. Rex Grossman turned out to be a good NFL quarterback. He was an MVP candidate for 1 year. He took a team to a Super Bowl. He just didn't become the franchise quarterback that you want him to be. But that wasn't the point of where I was going there. What bothers me about these quarterbacks, and everybody has pretty much agreed that the, quote, big four is Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, and Josh Allen, in whatever, you know, order you want to put them. I don't think Josh Allen is one of the best four. I have a couple other guys rated ahead of him. We'll get to that in a few minutes. What I'm getting at with this whole group is I don't think any of them, forget the grades, because the grades are sometimes relative to the other players available. The scouting reports on those five kids, I don't think any of them rate as highly as the first three last year did in Trubisky and Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. And none of those three rated as highly as the four kids who came before them when you look at Jared Goff and Carson Wentz and, of course, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. A, do you agree with that? And B, if you do, this is why teams should be so gun-shy about taking these kids with these top five, top ten picks.
Well, I can go to the back end of your question first. History shows us that 50% or more of these guys aren't going to make it. They're not going to live up to the expectations of where they were selected in the draft. And I agree with what you just said, and I've been saying this all along going back to last fall. There's no quarterback in this draft as good as the top three quarterbacks last year. Mitchell Trubisky would be head and shoulders above any of them. The same with Patrick Mahomes, the same with Watson. Their numbers are better. I just think their skill set is better. You can pick holes in every one of these guys this year, but at the same time, you've got a half a dozen teams that have a huge need for quarterback. You're not going to get them in free agency. When you do get them in free agency, as we saw back in March when free agency started, you overpay for mediocre guys. And so you have to get them and try to develop in the draft, and it's a hit-or-miss type situation.
You know, for Bears fans here in the audience, and let's forget the trade aspect of it. That's a whole separate conversation. I wasn't a fan of the Trubisky pick when they made it last year, not because I thought he was bad or was going to be a bust, because we just didn't know enough about him. This was a kid who had 13 game tapes coming out of college and couldn't beat out Marquise Williams for 2 years, who was a pretty good college quarterback but couldn't even stick on an NFL practice squad. Now he has shown us enough in those dozen starts that Ryan Pace was right. I was wrong. It looks like a real good pick, certainly worthy of that top five pick that you invested. But Eric, as I look at these kids, I can understand why a quarterback desperate team is going to be willing to overlook some of the warts on a Baker Mayfield, on a Sam Darnold, on a Josh Rosen. I don't understand how you can overlook the huge growths all over Josh Allen. I don't mean that to be a smartass or be negative. I mean, again, everything I hear is he's a great kid, and I hope that he's really successful and makes $100 million playing football. I just think it's a real long shot that it's going to happen, and I don't understand how a prospect who has been that mediocre a college quarterback at a mediocre program suddenly becomes part of the conversation of the top five, top ten kids in the draft.
Yeah, let's tell people who may not know much about Josh Allen who he is. He's this big athletic kid who out of high school struggled to get any kind of recruiting notice, went to junior college for a year, completed about 50% of his passes, got to go to Wyoming. Okay, not a terrible program, Mountain West, but definitely lower level. We're not talking Alabama or Miami here. Went there when he got in his chance, made some splash plays, showed off this arm, and everybody went, whoa, hey, okay, who's this kid? When he wasn't in the lineup, Wyoming was terrible. When he was there, they played well. So there's an understanding of like, hey, you could watch his 50 best plays and say, dude, okay, he's pretty good. But then you watch his 50 worst plays, Greg, and it's ugly. I mean, he, you know, would give up easy passes for 7-10 yards to try to hit the home run. He would overthrow receivers by 5 or 6 yards. Say what you want about arm strength, athleticism. I mean, he looks the part. I just don't see a guy who processes information and has that look of a confident, a sharply executing quarterback right now.
Well, the guy he reminds me of, I've said this all along, and it goes back to the same year we took Rex, Kyle Bowler,
yeah,
at Cal. And Bowler, before, what was his name, Jeff Tedford, became,
yep,
the head coach at Cal, he was like a 49% completion
right
guy. And then Tedford comes in that last year, and his completion percentage jumps up to about 58%. So you think, oh, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's got this wild arm, just like a Josh Allen has. He could get on one knee and throw it 75 yards in the air with a tight spiral. But it's more than just the physical. It's more than just a strong arm. You got to be able to process the game, read defenses, make good decisions. The one thing I see when I look at Josh Allen is, especially when he's under pressure, instead of stepping up in the pocket, mm-hmm, and trying to find a receiver, he always retreats and dumps the ball off. And that's not what you want to see from an NFL quarterback. And on top of that, you got the accuracy. There's no quarterback who's come into the game in the last 12 years that has had a 56% completion percentage. There's nobody been below 59% and had any success in the NFL. So you have to look at those numbers, and they're concerning. Now, does he have the physical traits to become a good player? Yes, and it's going to take a lot of coaching, and hopefully he'll be able to, you know, overcome some of the negatives and become the quarterback they hope he is. I have my doubts.
Ship to Cleveland. They have a good record with quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, there you go. Ugh. So at least 26, 27, maybe 28 teams are not going to take a quarterback in the first round, or maybe at all. So we're going to get away from that a little bit. We know that a lot of Bears fans here, the Bears aren't drafting quarterbacks, and get to the bigger group as a whole. Just before I continue, though, one of the things I do enjoy about these Facebook Live shows, we can be a little bit informal, kind of wing it as we go. I've got a couple more people I want to introduce you to. To my right over here is Dan Mott and Lee Saldano. They are actually the brains of the operation. They're the only ones here who really do know what they're doing. They're the ones who get us on the air and get us out into cyberspace. And guys, are we monitoring Facebook? I know in the past we've taken questions from people at Facebook, and if not, if there is a way, let's just see if there's any questions out there. We'll get to questions from the live audience here in a little while as we get deeper into this. I do want to talk now about what should be the top 10 in this draft, getting away from the quarterbacks, because there are some really great prospects. And it starts, I think, on most lists with, two young men for sure, Bradley Chubb, a big defensive end from North Carolina, and then you've got, of course, Quentin Nelson, the offensive guard from Notre Dame. This may be the first draft in the 41 years that I've been doing this where the best player in the draft is an offensive guard. I cannot find anybody who doesn't believe that Quentin Nelson is going to be a perennial All-Pro. So you start with Bradley Chubb and Quentin Nelson. Now, a lot of folks in the last couple weeks have tried to include Saquon Barkley in that group. Saquon Barkley is a top 5, top 10 prospect. prospect. But unlike the other two, he does have a few warts on him. Or not warts, but that's not fair. He has a few questions. And the big one is, when you go back and study Barkley, you'll find that in the biggest moments, the biggest games for Penn State in his college career, it was when he was the least visible. And that's got to concern you about a guy that you're drafting to be the face of the franchise. You move past those three, you probably get to the two safeties, Minkah Fitzpatrick from Alabama, Derwin James from Florida State, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Florida State. And then you've got Rokan Smith, the linebacker from Georgia. I'm doing this off the top of my head. I can't remember, Greg, if that's your top six, but those are certainly six of the best players in this draft. From there, it starts to split out a little bit. There's a ton of Tremaine Edmonds love out there, and I know you've heard that name if you're here in Chicago, because a lot of folks have tried to link him with the Bears. If this was a Mr. America contest, he'd be in the top five. As a football player, when you look at the production at Virginia Tech, he's still got some things to prove. Denzel Ward is the top-rated cornerback out of Ohio State. He's possibly a top-10 player. So just some of those names. And Greg, I'll come back to you first because you're the expert on this. There's probably a couple more that I missed. Is there anybody else that you would throw into that group right at the top?
No, I think you got him. And Denzel Ward could very well be a top-5 player. You know, depending on what Denver does at number 5, Denver could go quarterback. From everything I'm hearing, though, that's not what they're going to do. And that could be a position that they look at. He's a highly talented guy. Some people think he's as good as Marshawn Lattimore last year, who was the defensive rookie of the year in the NFC, and plays for New Orleans right now. And that type of player, and corner is a premier position when it comes to the draft.
See him play for the Bears? You think at number 8, I know they've re-signed Prince. I know they kept Fuller. Is he a possibility for them as a, you know, nickels play a lot?
Yeah, I would think he's got to be in the discussion. Okay. Just because of the overall talent. He's going to be in the discussion. James is going to be in the discussion. Fitzpatrick's going to be in the discussion. Yep. Obviously, depending on what happens with the quarterbacks, a trade down is going to be in the discussion. But you got to see exactly how the quarterbacks come off the board and then what's going to be sitting there, because the quarterbacks are going to get overdrafted.
Mm-hmm. You know, Greg, the one thing that troubles me a bit about Ward. Well, two things, actually. One,
he went to your rival school. Is that what
that's we're gonna, the third okay. thing? The fact that he went to Ohio State is a non-starter for me, but I'll leave that out because I'm not the Bears or any other team for that matter. And obviously, Ohio State is kind of becoming cornerback U. So, as much as us Michigan alum may hate him, it's a great place to go for a cornerback. But what bothers me about him, number one, a one-year starter with only one interception. Now, that's because these other great players were in front of him, like Marshawn Lattimore. But the thing that bothers me a little bit more. He's small. I mean, not tiny. You know, Darryl Green was smaller, and Darryl Green's in the Hall of Fame. Different game, different time. He is not 5'11". He's about 5'10 and a half, and he actually weighed less at the combine than I expected. He only checked in at 183. And, you know, Greg, in today's game, I see him trying to man up on a Julio Jones or on a Demaryius Thomas or an A.J. Green, and I don't know how he's going to do that.
Well, going into the combine, my main concern with him was height. He was 5'10". I think his official measurement was 5'10 and 7/8". And then he ran 4.38. The other thing I look at with corners, especially if they're a little bit on the shorter side, is arm length. He had over 31. I think he had 31.5-inch arms or something. And that can make up for a little bit of the lack of height. But I think from the perspective of how tall he is, his arm length, he's fine. And the speed is fine. And you look at why he didn't play last year, there was two first-round draft picks in front of him, and he was then the third corner, and he still logged something like 300-some-odd or 400 snaps for Ohio State's defense playing as the third corner, because, as we know, in today's college game, there's three or four wide receivers on every play.
Eric, let's talk about Quentin Nelson. He's such a fascinating prospect. There is some conversation about whether or not he could play left tackle, because left tackles you do take in the top five. Offensive guards, you try not to. He is being downgraded somewhat because two of the last three times a guard went in the top 10, they busted out, Jonathan Cooper and Chance Warmack. I think people tend to forget, though, that Brandon Scherff, just 3 years ago, he was a tackle at Iowa,
right,
went to Washington. Everybody said, what are you doing at number five? And I think he's been to two Pro Bowls. He is an offensive guard. Quentin Nelson is rated much more highly than any of those three guys. And his college coach, Harry Hiestand, is now the offensive line coach of the Chicago Bears. So a lot of people are trying to make one and one equal two and get Nelson to the Bears. I'm hard-pressed to see him getting to number eight. He's not going to Cleveland at one. That's going to be a quarterback. Everything I hear is the Giants are not taking a quarterback at number two. They know they've got Eli there. They don't love these quarterbacks. Dave Gettleman's been through this a bunch of times, their new GM. But as much as they have a big need on the offensive line, they probably have a bigger need at running back, and they may be just impossible to pass Bradley Chubb at that spot. So let's assume that he doesn't go there. The Jets are taking a quarterback at three. I keep hearing it's Baker Mayfield. And then you get to number four where the Browns are coming back up. Well, the Browns have already got two potential Pro Bowl guards in Joel Bitonio and Kevin Zeitler, so they're probably not going to do it either. Then you get to Denver. Now, I keep seeing teams trading up with Denver to take that third quarterback because I don't think the Broncos are taking a quarterback. But if the Broncos use that pick, it could very well be Nelson. And if they don't, the Colts would almost certainly take Nelson at number six. So it's kind of a hard path to see him getting through these first five or six picks.
Yeah, I agree. I think five and six are the trouble spots. I think those are the two teams that, even though there's three picks from that spot to win the Bears select, if they get past those two and then Tampa gets on the clock at seven, if you're a Bears fan and Quentin Nelson's still there, you know, start playing the Notre Dame fight song or something like that. Because I really think, I mean, I don't know how high you want to set the bar, Greg, but I mean, I had to go back. I was like, I'm going to find up a sack he gave up. I'm going to find the tape where he gave up a sack. I did. It was to Sam Hubbard in 2015. So I went back 3 years and found Quentin Nelson allowing one sack on a little swim move. So, okay, great. That's one sack in 3 years or something like that. He looks terrific. Maybe we've buttered him up too much, but fill us in. I mean, this is about as clean a prospect as you got in this class, I think.
You know, I've been doing this a long time, and I think he's the best guard prospect I've ever seen.
Wow.
Period. And
Larry Allen, I mean.
Well, Larry Allen played at Sac State.
True, yeah.
You know, so it was a totally different situation.
Right.
The one thing about Quentin Nelson is that, you know, last year, 2016 season, he played at between 340, 350 pounds, mm-hmm. probably too heavy. And he mm-hmm. wasn't fat. He was just big. And then he got down. He played at around 330 this year. And the more I watched him, I kept saying, you know, can he be a tackle? Now, he was recruited to play tackle. And then when he gets to Notre Dame, they already had some quality tackles in the NFL ahead of him. And so they get him on the field. They put him at the guard spot. I'm thinking that not only can he be a quality guard and probably a perennial Pro Bowl guard, but he can be a pretty good right tackle. Mm-hmm. Now, that's going to be up to the team that drafts him. You got to, you know, if you look at the mobility, to me, there's no reason why he can't be. But again, that goes back to the team that drafts him. You know, he's going to be a plug and play starter. The day he gets drafted, he's a starter.
You know, and the interesting thing, of course, if we're talking Chicago Bears, which we are for our live audience here at least, is it is one of their greatest needs. They absolutely need a pass rush. They need an interior lineman. In the last two drafts, Ryan Pace has traded up in the first round. Mm-hmm. Would he do it again to get this offensive guard? My issue with that is that if ever there was a draft that sets up for the Bears to be able to trade down, it is this one. And because of, and I mentioned it earlier and said I'd get back to it, the very unfortunate trade that he made to get Mitch Trubisky, because I've checked with sources with every team in the league and been absolutely assured he'd have been there at three. They didn't have to make the trade. So I think it's a great pick. I think they got a little too excited and made a mistake. They're without a third-round draft choice this year. And this team is at that stage in his fourth year where this needs to be the turning point season. He's got to fill three or four needs here. I would much rather, if Nelson's not on the board come 7 and 8, see the Bears trade down, assuming that Buffalo or Arizona is still looking to come up and get that third or fourth quarterback. I think it would be very doable. You possibly add another number one, depending on who you trade with. More likely, you end up with a mid-level one in this draft, but you get another two and a three or something like that. And because of the Bears' needs at guard, as I said, there's some other really good ones. I think after Chubb, all the best pass rushers could still be there if they trade down to 12 or 15. I'd rather see him trade down, but Greg, you know better than most, it's one thing to want to do it. How hard is it to get done?
Well, you have to have somebody who wants to come up, and that's going to depend on how the quarterbacks come off the board. Buffalo's situation, if they do in fact want to trade up, they're probably going to try to get higher than the Bears. So you can almost take them out of the equation. They might try to get to Denver. They might try to get to Cleveland at four. New York at two, except I think the price to get to two is just going to be exorbitant. So you could say Cleveland at four, Denver at five, Tampa Bay at seven, in order to try to get one of those quarterbacks. But then you still have Miami and Arizona. Now, what you get, look, using the trade chart as a guide, if they traded back with Miami at 11, you're only dropping three spots. It's a third-round pick. And it's the same thing with Buffalo at four. It's about a third-round pick. But if they're coming up for a quarterback, they might be willing to pay a little bit more. Trading back with Arizona at 15 brings you a second-round pick and maybe a second-round plus, a second and a fourth or a second and a fifth or something. So it's advantageous for them to do that, but at the same time, it's who you're looking at. Do we trade back versus taking such and such player? And you're really not going to know that until you see how the draft falls.
Well, and let's not forget, and I know you're working straight off the chart, but just last year you have an example where Houston and Kansas City overpaid a little bit to come up and get those quarterbacks. They gave up extra number ones, and because it's the quarterback, they're going to overpay. You know, but you flip it around, Eric, the thing that I don't think anybody's talking about, everybody keeps saying, oh, the Bears are in great shape to trade down if the quarterbacks are still there. They're in just as good a shape if the quarterbacks are gone. Because if three or four quarterbacks are already gone, now at least two, maybe three or four of the five best players in the draft are still there at number eight.
Yep.
And maybe somebody wants to trade with the Bears to come up and get Minkah Fitzpatrick or come up and get Saquon Barkley or whoever it may be. So I think either way you can make the argument that if that's where the Bears' focus is, they should have a pretty good opportunity to try and get it done.
Yeah, to me the price of the number eight pick for the Bears goes up if one of those quarterbacks still on the board, and you have a desperate team like a Buffalo, like a Miami, perhaps, if their guy is there. I think they have their eyes on one or two guys. But like in Arizona, who's counting on Sam Bradford, who can't even get through minicamps without, sitting in a hot tub for a while. So, yeah, I think the price goes up when they're still on the board and the Bucs are taking a defensive player and the Bears say, great, what are you going to offer us? So that's a great situation. I think Nelson or trade down makes a ton of sense if they feel like they can still get probably the defensive player. I think if they move down to 11 to 15 or something, I think at that point they're probably leaning defense. I don't know, just based on who's available and what their needs might be.
I would think that except for Quentin Nelson, it is defense.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a wide receiver.
Right.
There's no wide receiver that you're going to want to take
a running back, yeah,
in that top 15. It's not going to be a running back.
Yeah.
So it's defense or Quentin Nelson. And you know, again, it's who you're looking at and how high of a grade do they have on the players that are still sitting there, because that's going to tell a lot to them too. They're going to say, wait a minute, we got a such and such grade on. We're saying this guy's going to be a Pro Bowler. We got to take him. We're not going to trade because of the quality of that person. So, again, those decisions are made really now in this last week. You start going over these scenarios so that when you get to draft day, you know exactly what you're going to do. You don't want to be put into a situation where you've got to hurry up and make a decision that hasn't been well talked out. So you talk about these things now, you go through every scenario, and then you have an answer to it and you're making your calls. You know, you can draw a line in the sand as to how far down you want to move too, because again, the drop off in talent.
All right, guys, what we're going to do, and forgive me, I am not talented enough to visit with all of you and use my computer and get to Facebook and see the questions at the same time. So I don't know what's going on Facebook right now. But for those of you here, if you do have questions, just go ahead and throw your hand up. And bear with me. It's a little tough because we're looking into these lights. But we will find you, and I'm going to get to you in just a moment for your question first and then anybody else who wants to join. But there's another topic I want to address first, and this is almost ironic in a sense. If you're a Chicago Bears fan, you know that if not their greatest need, one of their two greatest needs is pass rush. Just coincidentally, I had a Packers luncheon up in Milwaukee this afternoon on the draft. Packers' greatest need is pass rush. Coincidentally, the Detroit Lions' greatest need, probably running back, but secondarily pass rush. It's an interesting year to be looking for edge rushers, because it's not that there aren't good ones out there, but once you get past Bradley Chubb, you're talking about nothing but these traits guys, these guys who are great athletes, who've shown great flashes, who may become the next Von Miller, but just didn't get it done in college or had a great year in 2016 and then fell off in 2017. So we're talking about guys like Harold Landry from Boston College. We're talking about guys like Tremaine Edmonds, who I mentioned earlier, who's a freak of an athlete but had no sack production in college. You're talking about a kid like Arden Key out of LSU, who after 2016 looked like he might have been Bradley Chubb. He could have been the number one player in this draft. He may not go in the first round now. You got a kid named Marcus Davenport out of University of Texas San Antonio, who is another one of these just freaks, and this is a complimentary term. I mean, 6'7", 260 pounds, can do everything athletically. He's playing at a school that's only been Division I for 4 years, showed up at the Senior Bowl, handed himself okay against that competition. So you've got potentially the next great pass rusher, but all of them have issues if you're going to take them in the top five, top ten, other than Chubb, and it makes it tricky to know, Eric, what to do about these kids.
Before we came here, I just finished writing up Tremaine Edmonds, and he's 19 years old. He won't turn 20 until May. So this is a guy who's entering the NFL at a position, Greg, at linebacker. I mean, you see some wide receivers, some linemen. I was talking to another personnel guy, and he said, we did a study on this. We looked at all the 20-year-old guys. Guys were 20 years old in the season that they entered the NFL. Some wide receivers, some defensive linemen, some offensive linemen. They couldn't find an off-the-ball linebacker who'd entered the league. And so if he's being asked to make calls or run the defense or anything for a guy who looked fooled by play action, stuff like that, his eyes would go here, the ball would go there. I mean, looks phenomenal. And he can barrel through some people. He can make tackles. He's got incredible upside. This isn't Brian Urlacher we're talking about, though, in my opinion.
Well, and that's a good comparison. I think when you look at height, weight, speed,
yeah.
Very, very similar. And the other similarity is Brian Urlacher was a safety in college.
True.
Okay, and then the Bears drafted him as a linebacker, played him outside, Sam linebacker as a rookie, and he really wasn't a fit there. It wasn't until he was moved inside that he got his niche, and actually that was when Lovey came along, because that was the perfect defense for him. But now when you look at Edmonds and you watch the tape, the one thing he does really well is actually playing coverage, and he takes away the middle of the field when he drops back in coverage. But people think he's a pass rusher, and he's not. He's played inside his whole career at Virginia Tech. He's a tall, linear guy. When you put him outside and have him rush the passer, he's a fish out of water. He doesn't know how to use his hands, doesn't have any moves. He's very, very raw. That's not to say he won't be at some time, but he isn't right now. And if you're drafting him to be a pass rusher, that's a projection.
Guys, there's talk about this being the best running back class in the last decade or so. Everybody's heard the name Saquon Barkley. He is absolutely a top five prospect. But you move past him, again, going into the 17 college season. Most people had Darius Geis of LSU rated ahead of Saquon Barkley. You got Ronnie Jones from USC. You've got Royce Freeman out at Oregon. You got Sony Michel. I mean, there are at least five, maybe six running backs that are certainly going to go in the first two rounds. And I think at least one or two of them, in addition to Barkley, is going to get into the first round. Everybody's heard about Barkley, Greg. Talk about which of the rest of these kids that you like a little bit more.
Well, number one, when I look at a running back, the thing that I focus on looking, you know, when they make the jump to the next level is, can they run inside? Mm-hmm. And let's go back a couple of years when the Bears took Jordan Howard. I had him rated in the Pro Football Weekly magazine as the number three running back in that class, and he goes in the fifth round.
And tell everybody who the first two were, so we know he was number three at the time.
Zeke Elliott, and I can't remember
and
who
Derrick
I had.
Derrick Henry.
Yeah, Derrick Henry.
Pretty good.
From Alabama. But the one thing that Jordan Howard could do was run between the tackles. He had great vision inside, made good cuts, very instinctive, positive yards after contact, was strong, and we've seen all that since he's been in the NFL. Well, that's my one bang, I think, on Barkley, is that he is not a great inside runner. You put him in space and he's second to none. It's a touchdown. You can put him out in the slot as a receiver. You can split him out. You can have him return kicks. But inside, and I think there was eight games this year, he didn't run for 100 yards. And that tells you something. As big as he is, 230 pounds, he's not a top inside runner. He's a space player. But now you look at guys like Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, and who else? Royce Freeman. These guys can run inside. They're big, strong, powerful guys that can move the chains, get yards after contact, and get the tough yards. And that's the difference between being a good back or an average back in the National Football League.
Eric, you know, going into last year, it had been 5 or 6 years since there'd really been a great safety prospect. You almost had to go back to Earl Thomas and Eric Berry. Last year,
you've got Jamal Adams, Malik Hooker, and Jabril Peppers all in the first round. Everybody said, boy, this will never happen again. Well, you look this year, and these two kids, Minkah Fitzpatrick and Derwin James, they are very, very special prospects. And so if you're a Bears fan, if you're a Packers fan, it's not the greatest need on either team's wish list, but it is a need for both. And these are kids, one of them could still be there at 14 when the Packers step up, and one of them is definitely going to be there when the Bears draft. It's possible both of them will be there when the Bears draft. And I think that as you look at any draft, you want playmakers. I mean, you may have a need that you want to fill, and you may say, I got to get a wideout or I got to get a defensive tackle. But more than anything, in the first round with a top 10 pick, you've got to get somebody who every time he's on the field can change the outcome of the game. And these two safety prospects would fit that. And if you're talking about the Chicago Bears, I'm really excited about Eddie Jackson. Adrian Amos got better the second half of the season, but you can still do better with a starter there.
Well, you said it. Adrian Amos, good player, right? Had a nice season. Not a playmaker, though. The one interception he had was a gift. Fuller tipped it. It went right to him. He took it to the house. But I could have run that back 40 yards. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have dropped it. But, yeah, the point is, I think you're absolutely right. Safeties can be game changers. They can be difference makers. But you have to have somebody like Derwin James, who's 6'3", 215, runs like a deer, outstanding athletic ability. Or Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's a little smaller than that. He's about, 6'205" or something like that?
Yeah, just over 6'205".
Could be an outside corner. Definitely can be a nickel corner. Could play deep safety. When Eddie Jackson got hurt 2 years ago, he played free safety. You want him up as a blitzer? He's really good at that, too. So they're different players. They're both freaks, to use your term, in different ways. I mean, personally, I have Derwin James this much higher. I can understand if somebody likes Minkah Fitzpatrick. I think both of you guys like Minkah just a little better. The versatility is outstanding. You play for Nick Saban and they give you five jobs and you execute them all well. I can't argue with that.
You know, Greg, one of the reasons I like Fitzpatrick more than James is when you go to the Pro Bowl each year and just check all the Bama players, it's like the whole defense played at Bama. You check on the offense, there's the exception every once in a while, like a Julio Jones. Yeah. Bama offensive players don't turn out so well. But Alabama has become an absolute factory in producing Pro Bowlers on defense in the NFL.
Well, especially at defensive back, too. And that's what Nick Saban's forte is. He was a defensive back coach all through his career, then a defensive coordinator. He works real strong. You go to an Alabama practice, he's working with that defense all the time. He never steps foot over on the offensive side. But looking at Minkah Fitzpatrick, and I went back – Jalen Ramsey was, the fourth or fifth pick in the draft a couple years ago. And I thought Minkah Fitzpatrick tape this past year at Alabama was better than Jalen Ramsey's at Florida State a few years ago. That's not to say he's going to be a better pro. I'm not saying that at all. But now, and Jalen Ramsey played safety that final year. He was a corner that got moved to safety. Minkah Fitzpatrick is the same thing. He was recruited to play corner, but they had strong corners. To get him on the field, he had to play safety. Eddie Jackson goes down. He was the nickelback. Eddie Jackson goes down, and then he becomes the starting safety. Plays real well. I went back. I was just looking at some tape again today. In the two college playoff games, he was playing up near the line of scrimmage, really playing like a linebacker in a lot of that game, and making plays. He's a tough guy. He's got good size. He can play the run. You can match him with a slot receiver in man coverage. He's excellent in zone, has ball skills. He's got the whole game.
We should, in full disclosure, point out the reason that Bama is an all-pro defensive player factory is these kids are all five-star players when they come out of high school. And, of course, Nick Saban has the highest payroll in college football. But nonetheless, you know, if you get one of those kids, you're in really good shape.
I don't know if Nick would like you saying that.
Yeah. I say more that these guys don't like than what they do like. So what are you going to do? All right, I don't know if we've got anybody on Facebook yet. We had a gentleman over here who had a question. I don't know if we already answered it. Sir, what do you got for us?
So if Mitch had stayed in school one more year and come out with these guys, how would he have ranked?
Great question.
I think he'd be first.
Yeah.
No question about it. Number one, he would have had another year of experience. He played pretty good his 1 year as a starter at North Carolina. His completion percentage was up around 69%, if I recall, at North Carolina as a starter that 1 year. None of these guys have completion percentage up that high, and he didn't have the supporting cast that some of these guys have, like Darnold has at USC.
The one qualifier there is that he stayed – and played as well as he did in his 12 starts for the Bears. Because, again, we come back to that junior year, or was he a third-year sophomore, whatever it was, the 13 games he played off that the Bears drafted him off, you couldn't see it as clearly there. You know, guys, I guess this is a strong statement. If we didn't make strong statements, why would you want to listen to what we have to say? There is no doubt in my mind that Baker Mayfield is the best of these four quarterback prospects. And when you compare Trubisky as a prospect to Baker Mayfield, I don't think it's close. As a prospect, you know, we'll see what kind of players they become. I don't know if you agree with any of this or disagree.
Yeah, Baker's a bulldog, and certainly people know, you know, maybe some off-field antics, some on-field antics. He had a colorful last season for Oklahoma. He's not prototypical height, Greg. Obviously, we haven't, you know, a generation ago, we didn't see 6 foot, 6 foot 1.
6 foot a half inch.
Yeah, six foot half inch.
If he's 6'2",
yeah,
he's hands down number one in the draft.
There you go. And there used to be that 6'2". You had to be this tall to ride this ride. You know, that was kind of the quarterback thing. But then you see guys like Russell Wilson and Drew Brees, and there are always exceptions to that rule. I'm not worried about the height. I think he's a competitor. And I think if you're willing to tailor the offense to what he does well, he could be the best quarterback in this draft, no question. If you want more of that traditional drop-back style passer, an Eli Manning type of guy, Josh Rosen to me is the best passer. So it depends on your offensive philosophy, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, I understand, and I apologize to the folks with us on Facebook. I just realized, or Dan reminded me, I've got to repeat the question so everybody gets it. That question was, if Mitch Trubisky had stayed in school and been in this draft, where would he rank? We all tend to agree he'd be the top prospect. I think one other important note on some of these kids, when you hear these red flags, and they come with Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield as maybe being off-the-field issues, character questions, some of the stuff they did, I think you always have to take a step back and look at that and realize, I mean, at this point, I got five kids in their 30s now, and every one of them did 10 things worse than what Baker Mayfield or Josh Rosen have done. So it doesn't mean they're bad kids. You know, it's that these guys get so overanalyzed, and you worry how some of these character things are going to play in a locker room with 52 teammates or in taking command of a huddle. In the case of Baker Mayfield, he got drunk at a frat party. The cops came. He tried to run away. He got tackled by a cop.
That's a negative.
Not a good thing. Not something you want to pop up, you know.
He should never have gotten tackled.
But it's also the 3 o'clock in the morning phone call I got on my kids 15 times, you know. Not the same kid, by the way, all 15 times. So, you know, you don't disqualify these kids for that reason. Josh Rosen is being criticized for being too smart. And at the end of the day, that's what it really comes down to, is people think that he's arrogant and he thinks he's too smart and he can come across that way sometimes. Now, I don't pretend to know him, but got to spend, you know, 25, 30 minutes with him at the Combine. I liked him. I thought he came across, presented himself very well. Now, allegedly, he was climbing up draft boards for about 3-4 weeks after the Combine. Supposedly, he's slipping again now. Sometimes this is where you get to overthinking this stuff. And so you can't ignore the personality stuff. I told my Cade McNown story, but that was a different story. That was a guy who had problems with his own teammates in the locker room. Now, one of the things about Rosen is there is the word out there that he may not have been the most popular guy in the locker room. That's a legitimate concern.
Yep.
But some of the stuff you're hearing about Baker Mayfield, he's probably a half inch taller than Drew Brees, and he wasn't in trouble all the time in college. All he was doing was winning football games.
Draft history story that applies to this now. You asked for it earlier. I wish I had thought of it at the time. I think it was 2005 was the Smith-Rodgers debate, right? Who was the best quarterback in that, Aaron Rodgers or Alex Smith? And one of my first early good sources that I relied on at that point, 2005, I went to him and said, all right, give me the story. How do you divide these two? Because everybody was asking who was better, Smith from Utah, young guy, Aaron Rodgers, you know, had the great year at Cal and all that. And his comment to me was, fair, obviously hindsight is 2020, he said, arrogant, same thing we said for Josh Rosen, wasn't beloved by every single one of his teammates, thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, you know, carries that sort of edge to him, unapproachable, you know, sort of the same talking points we're saying with Rosen. Now, obviously, Aaron Rodgers, once-in-a-generation talent, great, you know, Hall of Fame quarterback to be, whatever. So, I think we do overanalyze the character stuff. Now, granted, I also asked two of Rosen's offensive linemen at the Combine. One of them defended him to the end. This guy was going to go to battle for him, his center, Scott Questenberry. His left tackle, Colton Miller, gave a really tepid response. Didn't seem like he had any interest in really going that far to defend him. Take it how you will.
The great thing about these phones is you're in real time. Sometimes it's not such a great thing. Some really sad news, guys. Apparently, just within the last few minutes, former First Lady Barbara Bush has passed away. She was 92 years old. I know if you're following, I'm sure you are following news, we'd heard in the last couple days, didn't realize it was that imminent. That is a loss of a truly great American, and I know all of us at Pro Football Weekly share our thoughts and prayers with the Bush family. Great life, well lived, though, and certainly probably a hero for us and many of our kids. So I saw some other hands. I thought I saw one over here, and I'm coming right back to you next. Yes, sir.
First of all, thanks for holding this event.
Well, thanks again to Dave Ficone and the Rib House, Crystal Lake Rib House, for being our hosts, and thanks to all of you for coming. And we're here because it's our job, so you have to thank us. But go ahead.
You guys talked about Mitch being the first guy picked, and earlier you talked about that Ryan Pace overpaid. In the end, you answered the question. We didn't overpay if he would have been the first guy in this draft. He gave up a 3 and 2 fours. They traded down from 2. They got a couple more fours. So in the end, I think we're happy. Now the real question. Everybody focuses on the first round of the draft. Talking heads on ESPN, NFL Network, top 10. They focus on that, folks. That the drafts are 1, day 2, draft 3. Okay, Ryan Pace has traded down for the last 2 years in the second round. He hasn't got a 3. He's going to probably do that. He's got 2 fours. Who do you guys see the Bears looking at second round or trading down? You know, in the 4th and the 5th, where we got Howard. That's where your teams are built. Day 2 and 3. The first day, yeah, it's important. That in the end, as Greg could probably say, it's the other 2 days that'll make your team great or not.
All right, so a comment and a question. The explanation that because of what we think of Mr. Trubisky now, the Bears did not overpay with the draft. I don't want to debate you on that. It's all relevant. If they could have gotten him at 3 instead of 2, they overpaid. But at the end of the day, your point, which many people have been making from the minute they made the pick, if he becomes a franchise quarterback, you don't care so much. And that certainly is true. And then I think basically the thrust of the second question or first question is, what do we think the Bears are likely to do in the 2nd and 4th round if they don't come up with a 3rd round pick? Greg, you want to take a guess first? Or?
Yeah, well, a lot of it has to do with who they select in the 1st round. You're not going to load up on one position. So if they get an edge player in the 1st round, now when you get into the 2nd round, you know, you're looking, could be an offensive lineman, but it's who, it, as compared to who? Who are you looking at on the board? Could be a wide receiver, could be a defensive back, but it's not going to be an edge if they take an edge in the 1st round. So, and the same thing when you get into the 4th round, if you don't pick up a 3rd, it's you want to get players at different areas to help your team, and especially need areas, but at the same time, you don't want to drop off in talent. So if you're looking at 3 players from 3 positions of need that have relatively the same grade on the board, then just take your pick.
And they also have doubled.
Who the players are, I can't tell you because I don't know who's going to get picked.
And they also have doubled up at positions where they sign one in free agency, they draft one the same year. We've seen that last year. That happened a couple times. So, you know, you can still look at the positions they filled, you know, in free agency this year, and it wouldn't shock me to see them add a layer of depth beyond that. So, safety, if they don't take one high, I think they will take one in the middle rounds. And I wouldn't be shocked to see a running back and a defensive lineman on day 3.
You know what I think is going to come into play, too, is that, you know, they got a mini camp going on right now. They get that extra mini camp because they have a new coaching staff. That's the coaching staff's first real look at these guys on a football field doing football things. And I think they're going to get an opinion about some of these guys, and then they can go back and it's not going to matter with the 1st round, but it can matter with the other rounds. Where do we need some more depth? Where do we have to get some players?
I think I mentioned earlier near the top, this is my 41st year doing this now, and one of the guys who mentored me, because I ended up doing this young because my dad passed away, Jim Finks was a good friend of my dad's, and he kind of took me under his wing, him and Al Davis, as a matter of fact, and they both were completely consistent on this throughout their Hall of Fame careers in the NFL. The most important thing in the draft is you always draft the best available football player. I don't care what your need is. If the Bears are sitting there in the 2nd round, and for some reason, Josh Allen is there, and they've decided he can be better than Mr. Trubisky. If you believe it, you do it. It's not going to happen. I'm not pretending that. But that the point would be, the only way you're successful is if you are always taking the best football players. The other thing that Jim Finks and Al Davis and Bill Tobin, who was remarkably successful drafting with not only the Bears, but the Bears and the Colts and the Bengals, is that they wanted players who were highly productive in college, players who were winners in college, players who came from big programs, were used to being on the big stage. And so I think when you look at the second-round pick, the fourth-round pick, you know, without knowing who's on the board, if you follow those tenets, if you are looking for the very best football player who's already produced, who you know can do it. That's why I didn't like the Adam Shaheen pick. Now, I hope I'm wrong. You know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, you do that in the fifth round, in the sixth round. In the second round, granted, they traded down. They got an extra fourth-round pick to do it. But that I'm not wild about. When you start reaching that early in the draft where you know, that's why Cody Whitehair was such a great pick 2 years ago. I know he had a bad sophomore year, but he was all rookie his freshman year. And here's a guy they traded down twice and still got a guy who was one of the best offensive linemen coming out of school. So it's those kind of moves that I think you're looking to make. Now, maybe the answer you want is, in a perfect world, what would be there for them in the second and fourth round? Well, if they go pass rusher in the first round, there's going to be a really good offensive guard sitting there at 39. If they've got a pass rusher and an offensive guard or an interior lineman with their first two picks and they come back in the fourth round pick, they still need help at wide receiver. They probably still need depth at tight end because Trey Burton is really a receiver. He's not really a tight end. And as I've said, I'd like another starting safety. And I don't think inside linebacker is a huge need for them, guys, because I like Kwiatkowski. And if Dan Trevathan stays healthy, he's really good. But there's no depth there without Christian Jones. So they could be looking inside linebacker instead of outside backer.
And I'll say this. I think they still need another corner. And if they pass on a corner at number 39 in the second round, when they come back to pick at 105 or whatever it is, just two picks back-to-back in the fourth, the drop-off is going to be significant. I mean, that's just the risk they're going to have to take. And like Greg said, the coaches will say, okay, you know, we like this guy. Our depth is, you know, three deep. We're okay with that, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then they don't have to rush the pick. But if they don't take a corner in the second round, they may not take one until the sixth or seventh is what I'm saying. So I just think the drop-off at that position is notable. Whereas linebacker, there might be some depth.
Well, there is some depth at linebacker, but some of them are undersized guys too.
Yep.
And the scheme they play, you got to have some bulk. But looking at the corner class, I think this is a pretty good corner class. And you're going to get into the fourth round some decent
really?
Corners.
Really? That deep?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, generally speaking, and I did the study years ago when I was working for the Giants, there's in most drafts, you got 12 to 15 corners off the board in the first three rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, I think, you know, it's a little deeper than that. Might go to 16, 17, and
wow.
You're picking high, you know, and they might, you know, never know if they're going to pick up that third round. And the other thing that you factor into it, what my board says and what Mel Kiper's board says and what the teams around the league say, they're all different. No two boards are the same.
Yep.
Everybody ranks the players differently, and a lot of it has to do with the position profile. Position profile. In other words, you're writing up a definition for what you're looking for at each position on the field, and that's height, weight, speed, different set of skills for that position. And so when you draft a player, you're trying to find a guy that fits the profile.
Again, for those of you who are with us on Facebook, we are at the Crystal Lake Rib House in beautiful Crystal Lake, Illinois. If you're anywhere near McHenry County, you want to get out here. It's not that I don't love visiting with you guys, but I can't wait till we're done to order me up some ribs, get a few cold beers. The food is outstanding. The drinks are great. By the way, can we have a round of applause for our service staff here? These guys are fantastic. They're in here taking care of us, and it's just such a fun place to visit. We hope that you all will get over here at your first opportunity if you're not here with us already. We've got about maybe 5 minutes left. We're going to get some more questions. I know we got one over here. Is there anybody out there in cyberspace? Are there any Facebook questions? Or
here, we might have some right here.
All right, I'm going to take one here while you guys cue those up. I see a gentleman right there with your hand up. Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you. I was wondering what you guys thought of that big defensive lineman from Washington, Vita Vea. Is that maybe thinking too much outside the box that they might draft a guy for the line just to really solidify that position?
Well, hey, there's nothing wrong with good football players. The question, first of all, is how good a football player is he? He's a massive individual, about 340, 350 pounds. A kid who almost came out last year and went back. I don't know. I defer to Greg on this. I'm not sure he improved his stock all that much by staying in school. I guess the issue there, I think Eddie Goldman's got some special in him, and he's your nose tackle coming into his fourth season here. They're going to have to make a decision on extending him and if he's the future. There's no question that Akeem Hicks has got some special in him. Jonathan Bullard was coming on late last year, and maybe even Roy Robertson-Harris, who's going to be a five technique. So if you think Vita Vea is a potential Pro Bowler or All-Pro, you go get him. But I don't think there's any way you can take him at 8, and I'm not sure he's going to be there at 39. I think he probably won't be. So he probably falls kind of in space on them. Greg, you have anything different on that? Or?
The only thing, if you trade it down, he might, and if you're, say, down with the Arizona pick at 15, he might fall into the conversation then. I think he can be a 5 technique. Watch, he's a very athletic guy. For as big as he is, very, very athletic. He moves around well. He's got quickness. He's got speed, change of direction, body control. He's got the skill set that you're looking for, and I think he can, you know, he's got the versatility to play at the 5 technique, play at the nose, so then when you're working a rotation, you've got a guy that can work in really well with the other guys.
He played like Kalodi Nata did, you know, where they moved him over the center, over the guard, and the outside center. I mean, he played all those positions, so it's not the craziest pick. I think at 8, probably too rich.
Yeah, but don't misunderstand. Not a bad pick. Not a bad thought.
Good player.
I look at this football team, and I'm asking myself, how do they take the next step this year? How do they become a wild card contender? And I don't know. I mean, he certainly makes the defensive front better. I don't know how much better of a football team he makes them, because they've gotten pretty decent play up front. I think the back seven is where you're looking for reinforcements a little bit more. But again, what did I just say? If you believe he's the best football player on the board, then you take him, and you don't worry about what position he's going to play. Do we have any other questions out there? Yes, sir.
What are your thoughts on Kevin White, and why is he still on the roster?
Well, he's still on the roster because he was the 7th overall pick in the draft, and they owe him another $5-6 million for starters. But beyond that, he should still be on the roster. You know, guys, listen, we didn't know when they drafted him. He was drafted as a developmental prospect. He was an incredible athlete, great size, great speed, unbelievable speed for his size. But you knew coming out of West Virginia. I actually talked to Dana Holderson, who was his coach there, about a month after the draft. And he said, listen, this is one of the best kids I've been around. He's got the ability to become a superstar, but he's basically a player with 2 routes on his tree right now. And in the NFL, you got to have at least 7, maybe 9 routes on that tree. And so it was always a question of how they were going to develop him. It is not his or the Chicago Bears' fault that he had a stress fracture in his leg. It's not their fault that he came back the next year and broke the ankle on the other leg, and it's not their fault he tore up his shoulder last year. So I will tell you that what concerns me about him is that prior to the shoulder injury in Bourbonnais, I didn't think he looked very good. And they were telling us he was 100% from the first 2 leg injuries, but he didn't appear to be separating from anybody. He didn't appear to have developed any of those routes, which in fairness to him, it's kind of hard to develop your routes when you got broken legs. So I'm not optimistic. But based on the investment you have him, it's not costing you anything extra to go to camp with him this year and see what he can do. Greg, I'd go so far as to say he's not a lock to make this football team, not after these first 3 years being lost, but I think you do want to give him every opportunity to.
I would agree with you that he's not a lock, but at the same time, his salary's guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So he's getting $5 million plus one way or the other. And why does he have guaranteed money? Because of where he was selected. You get picked in that area, and you get a guaranteed contract. Instead of the big signing bonus, that's how they work out the deals. So he is, you know, I based on that $5 million, it's a $5.5 million cap hit. If you cut him, I think they're going to try to give him every opportunity to succeed, based on the fact that they paid a high price to get him. He is a talented guy, but at the same time, what I think, and I agree with what Hub said, he didn't look like he ran 4.35, but he doesn't play 4.35. He doesn't play 4.35 because he's unsure of what he's doing. And that's the difference between being a college receiver in a spread offense where you have a minimal route tree versus an NFL offense where you've got a huge route tree and you got to make side adjustments. And when you're not sure of yourself, all of a sudden that 4.3 guy is a 4.7 guy.
I guess the question is, what would Kevin White be had he not suffered those injuries? You know, and what, you know, what would those strides have been? Because, like you said, he played on one side of the field in college. He was a junior college kid. He only ran a handful of routes, you know, and just those little things you pick up day to day in practice against your teammates, in games against opponents, all the tricks the corners pull out.
He's not learning that by not playing. That's really, really tough for, like you said, a developmental guy. With Meredith gone, they at least have to sort of go to camp with him, I think.
I had another NFC North GM tell me right after that draft about Kevin. He said, listen, I think he fits at number seven because of his traits, because of his athletic ability. But what bothered me about him and the reason I wouldn't have taken him is in 2 years at Lackawanna Junior College, he was an average football player. He caught 35 passes in a full season in junior college. Now, yes, he went and eventually had the huge year at West Virginia, but why an athlete of that stature couldn't dominate in junior college was a little concerning. So, but that's the beauty of this, guys. You're going to get the negatives and the positives, and the guys who are really good at it, like Greg was for 30 years, figure out how to be right more often than they're wrong. Anybody who thinks you're going to bat 1,000 or 750 at this is kidding themselves. We've done a lot of historical analysis of the draft. You bat 400, you're one of the best. You know, and that's really hard to do. John, anything on Facebook? Or?
Yeah, we got one question. If Quentin Nelson is not available, do you think Ryan Pace takes his Notre Dame teammate, Mike McClinch?
All right, so the question from someone who's joining us on the Facebook feed is, if Quentin Nelson is not there at 8, would the Bears, maybe in part because Harry Hiestand, the Notre Dame offensive line coach last year, is now the Bears offensive line coach, would they take Mike McClinchy, who was the left tackle on that line with Nelson? I'll just start and give you a quick answer. Absolutely not, because he's not one of the top 15 prospects in the draft, let alone one of the top 8. Now, if you trade down to 15, if you trade down to 18, then it becomes a different conversation. I've been outspoken about thinking, I think one of the Bears' greatest needs is a left tackle. Charles Leno, another great kid. He's gotten paid. I'm happy for him. You've got your money. You're not very good. Let's get a better football player. That's my take on that position, because I think it's a really important position.
You know, I like McClinchy, but I think, you know, he came into Notre Dame, played right tackle his first year. Ronnie Stanley went the sixth pick overall, I think, to Baltimore, was the left side. So when Stanley goes into the NFL, they move McClinchy over to the left side. He struggled a little bit on the left side. A year ago, 2016 season, he had a number of false starts penalties. Those cleared up this year, but he still had problem with wide speed. I think he's a natural right tackle. He's not. You can get by with him in the league as a left tackle, but I don't think, you know, he's not going to get you to a championship game type of guy. I think you put him on the right side, he's going to be a hell of a player.
I'd rather have Tyrell Crosby at 39 or whatever, you know, that type of player. Mark Helfrich coached him at Oregon. I'd rather have him at 39 than I would at McGlinchey at 8, or if they traded down a few spots. I think he's good. I just don't know if he's ever going to be great.
Yeah, Greg, I don't know if you ever fell into this trap, but I know Eric, myself, as media guys, it's impossible to avoid. Every year there's a couple guys I fall in love with. And every time I turn on the Tyrell Crosby tape, I see Jason Peters. I'm just stylistically, body type, that's the player I see. Now, whether this kid can be that player or not, I don't know. I do know that there's a team in New England that loves him. And so anytime I hear the Patriots like somebody, I think he might be a pretty good football player.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I started looking at tape on him, I was the same way you were. You know, what's wrong with this guy?
Right.
He very aggressive, not a little chubby, and when you see him in person.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I know, look at me. But when you look at him in person, he's not exactly what you want. And at the Senior Bowl, I thought in the one-on-ones he was a little bit straight-legged. But you go back to that Oregon tape, very, very impressive guy. And he's a great, you know, he goes after people. You know, he snap to whistle type of guy. He's got good feet, good recovery quickness, can use his hands. And obviously playing in that offense, he knows how to pass block. But he could be a pretty good run blocker, too.
All right, we've only got a minute or two. I just want to stand up so I can see over these lights to make sure I'm not missing anybody. I want maybe if there's anybody who had not asked a question yet. I don't see anybody over there, so let me come back over here. Did I miss somebody over there? I'm sorry. Let me go over here first. I'm sorry, I missed it. Yes.
Are there any wide receivers aside from Calvin Ridley you see with like a day one grade, and are there possibly any other receivers maybe you're higher on than most people?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Cortland Sutton, I think he's going to go ahead of Ridley, to tell you the truth, but they'll be close to each other. DJ Moore from Maryland is a kid who's been shooting up the charts. I'm drawing a blank. The one more, I think, with a potential first round grade. I've got it right in front of me.
Christian Kirk, maybe.
Christian Kirk, folks like. I was actually thinking of James Washington, who I like a lot. So there are plenty of good wide receivers. The question for me, Greg, is how many of them belong more in the second round on day two?
I think there's two legitimate, maybe three in the first round, and Sutton could very well be the first one. I got him pegged going to Dallas. He's taking Des Bryant's place. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, local kid, went to SMU. Ridley, you know, talked to some people I know in the league that have made school calls at Alabama. They say he's the ultimate competitor. Now, he tested good. He didn't test great, not off the charts by any means, but he's a great route runner, very, very competitive, has great hands. He's going to come in and play right away. Same way with Sutton. Sutton is a big guy. He's a physical receiver. The problem I had with Washington, and I loved Washington going into the combine, is he ran slow. You see this guy on tape, and you thought he was going to be a 4.3 guy, and he was a 4.54 guy. And he never ran again at the pro day, so he knew that's what he was. But he plays fast. He's a game breaker. But is he a type of guy you take at the first? I see him as more in the second. DJ Moore, I didn't see the speed on tape. But then he showed it at the combine and all across the board. And the other drills measured up to his, you know, 4.4 speed as far as the jumps, because a lot of these things correlate. Fast guys usually jump high. So when you look at all the drills, they all correlated that, you know, said he was running a legitimate speed.
One more name I'll throw out there. If the Bears are looking for more of a slot guy and it's a little later, they've done some work on a kid named Richie James from Middle Tennessee State. I've heard maybe kind of fourth round. Does that sound about right for him? Fourth, fifth, something like that? Or may a little high maybe? Or
no, in all honesty, I haven't done a lot on him.
He was hurt most of last year. Yeah, I mean, he played some Wildcat QB a couple years ago. But, yeah, he's a very interesting kind of Taylor Gabriel size receiver. So if they're looking for a little depth at that spot, he could
be there.
There
was a BYU receiver, too, that they had dinner with the night before
Jordan
the pro day. And
then
he ran like 4.3 and jumped out of the building.
Yeah. Yeah,
but he's a you know, a guy project that you take later.
Yep. I'll give you guys one more day three name, although he may be moving up to day two, more likely day three. He didn't test all that well, but another Penn State kid, Deshaun Hamilton.
Yes.
I watch him on tape, and this kid's going to play in the NFL. And don't forget, Allen Robinson was a second-round pick, you know, who nobody knew that he had a 1,400-yard, 12-touchdown season in him. So as we start to move later in the draft where the Bears might be thinking wide out, keep an eye on Deshaun
Hamilton. High character, too. High character for him.
For all I know, him and Allen Robinson were in the same frat at Penn State. So I know we had two more questions over here, so we're going to wrap up with you guys. Yes, sir. I'm looking into these lights, and it's just really...
Okay, wide receiver, do you think there's a spot for Tanner Gentry going forward with the Bears?
No. Next question. No, I'm kidding. I was the president of the Tanner Gentry fan club in Bourbonnais last year, and they brought him back. They put him on the practice squad. He got into some games. He got activated. He got, you know, pushed back to the practice squad. A wide receiver in the NFL, you have to be able to separate. It's all about separation. You can have great speed, you can have great quickness, great moves, but if defenders can lock onto you and you can't, you know, become an open target, you're not going to have much of a career. And that's the difference. That's why he was an undrafted rookie free agent. And again, unless you guys disagree, I think that's the piece that's probably missing for Tanner Gentry.
Very productive. He was Josh Allen's number one guy going back to the 2016 season. He's not very fast. He's a 4.6 guy, and he plays like a 4.6 guy. And in this offense, the emphasis is on speed and quickness and separation. You got to be able to do that. So you look at guys like Christian Kirk. Those are the guys that are the fits. There's some big receivers in this draft that are really good players, but I don't see them as fits in this offense.
Yeah, unless he becomes a Pro Bowl special teamer, I really can't see much of a future. I mean, you know, he'll try to make the team this year, and then they move on from him.
He's a great kid, and I wish the answer could be yes. I know why you'd ask the question, but he's not Danny Amendola or Wes Welker. I mean, they are better athletes and quicker than people realize. He's in that mold, but there's just a little bit missing. Was there one right behind this light? Yes, sir.
Right, Washington, yep.
I'm a Seahawk fan, probably the only one in the room here. It looks more and more like Earl Thomas is going to be dealt. So at this point, this is more of a great question. What kind of value would he have at this point? How many draft picks do you think they'd be able to get?
Good question.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would think you'd have to give up a good amount. Now you have to pay him. But.
Yeah. You know, the problem, though, when you start trading in the NFL, it just doesn't work like other sports. You don't get the value that you expect to. Look at what the Chiefs got for Marcus Peters, who's the best cornerback in football. Now, granted, he's got a lot of baggage, and Earl Thomas does not. But I think they got a 3 and a 6, didn't they? Jason Pierre-Paul is a perennial Pro Bowl defensive end that you had under contract, and all they could get from the Bucs was a third-round draft choice. So Earl Thomas is better than both of them, but my guess is the most you might get is a second. You know,
part of it has to do with the contract, too, because if you're taking on a big contract, then you don't want to have to give up a lot in the draft because the money part plays into it.
Yeah, the Seahawks don't have a pick between number 18, 19, wherever they pick, until 120. They drop 100, more than 100 picks. If Dallas offered up the 50th pick in the draft and then maybe something next year, you know, would they take it? That's tough to lose him. And potentially Cam Chancellor as well for the whole year. I don't know.
The Seahawks are just a classic cautionary tale because it's the price of being great for everybody but the New England Patriots. I mean, you look at what they did, and from 2011, 2012 through 2016, you'd have to call them, I think, the best franchise in the NFC. The price of that is that they now have one of the worst salary cap situations in the NFL. They have one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL, and all their superstars are leaving at the same time. And so, when they made the Michael Bennett trade, that's when you knew they're talking about a complete rebuild there. Richard Sherman, it was the right time. He had to go. You couldn't match the contract. But they had Bennett signed, and he was the difference maker on that defense. So once they moved him, and now Cam Chancellor, I don't know. I'm not hearing the same things of you. I think that they might want to build around Thomas so he can develop some of the younger players they're going to be bringing in. But they need so much now. I mean, you've got the franchise quarterback, but you need starters almost everywhere else, really, when you look at it. So it wouldn't be shocking if they could get a bunch of picks for Earl Thomas. But they're in a world of hurt right now. It's going to be a rough couple of years. I hate to be the bearer of that news, but
he wants a new contract too, so he's not going to go to camp unless he's got a new deal.
Well, and by the way, that's not a criticism of the Seahawks. Don't bury the lead. Best team in the NFC for half a decade. They did a great job. But eventually, it's time to pay the piper, and that's kind of what they're going to have to do. And now we'll see if John Schneider can stick around long enough with Pete Carroll. If Pete Carroll sticks around long enough, don't take this wrong, but he's one of my least favorite NFL people. He's got a little bit of a history of getting out of town just in front of the posse, So we'll see what happens there. But if him and Schneider stick around, maybe they can do it again because they did a great job this time. Did we get everybody? Maybe take one more. This is going to be the last one. Yes, sir.
Mostly Bears fans in here. What's your collective opinion of Ryan Pace and how he's drafted since he's been the general manager?
Greg, you're the expert. We'll all answer, but I'll let Greg go first.
I like what he's done in the draft. Free agency, we don't know what's going to happen with this year's free agent. So, that goes ungraded. But the draft, I think he's done a pretty good job overall. He's gotten players at different areas of the draft. Obviously, the Kevin White situation didn't work out the way they had hoped it would work out because of injuries. But all told, when you look at some of the players he's gotten later rounds, I think he gets a B-plus to an A.
Eric?
Yeah, I think the free agency misses have been bigger than the draft misses to this point. Again, Kevin White's you can't hold that one against him yet, I don't think. But, a lot of people are saying, hey, maybe you should have tendered Cam Meredith at a higher rate to protect yourself. There are ways to do this more creatively. They played it beautifully with Fuller. I don't think they played it correct with Meredith, even if they're ready to move on from him. So, they can spin whatever story they want about it being medical. I just don't necessarily agree. A lot of good players like Whitehair and Bullard and those type of folks, and a couple of late gems. So far, the drafting, I would say I would give him about a B+, and the free agency, I would give him about a C-.
Yeah, Ryan's main focus in New Orleans was on the pro personnel side for a long time. And I think he gets overly criticized only because he's had a couple real big wins, too. Akeem Hicks is a great signing. Prince Amukamara right now is looking like a good signing. Danny Trevathan, I think, was a really good signing. Bobby Massey has turned out to be a good signing. People don't, talk about that much. He's not – people act like he's the problem on the offensive line. I do pregame every Sunday for the Bears with Olin Krutz and James Big Cat Williams. They know a little bit about offensive line play for the Chicago Bears. They're Massey fans. And so You know, he's had some good signings, but he's made too many mistakes in free agency. And I don't really count Mike Glennon against him, because the reality is it was always a one-year deal anyway. He's not the only one who thought maybe Glennon could play. They structured the contract wisely. It was a bad signing, but it's not the disaster people paint it to be. When you get to the draft, eventually this is going to be the year. This is when we're going to decide, because this is year four. He's got to have Trubisky become what he thought he could be, and either Floyd or White have to hit. You can't miss on back-to-back top 10 picks, and we'll see what he does this year. But I really like what he's done after the first round so far, and I think he has a chance to be one of the real good drafters if he keeps going the way he's gone. So, guys, one more time, we want to say thank you to the Crystal Lake Rib House for being such wonderful hosts. Dave Ficone, thank you so much for having us back again. If you are not with us here live, I'm sure the folks here live will tell you the food is great, the beer is cold. Come on out whenever you can. To everybody who has joined us on Facebook, thank you so much for being with us. Before you get off your computer, go to ProFootballWeekly.com, check Team for the Ages. Just hit enter now, get into the contest. You don't want to miss it. All you guys here, as soon as you get home, or you can do it on your phones right now, make sure you do it. Our thanks to everybody here at the Rib House. Again, Dan Mott, Lee Saldano, Kristen Henley, and Brett Mehring are here from the business side. They've been taking care of you guys all night long. John Sally is here somewhere as well. To Greg Gabriel, to Eric Edholm, thank you guys so much. Now, for those of you here, stay right where you're at, because we're going to sign off on Facebook. Sorry, Facebook, you guys don't get the prizes, but these guys do. So we're going to give away some gifts in just a moment.